in Klal Yisrael crossing the sea. The whole parsha of Kriyas Yam Suf plays a very important role in the eyes of Chazal. Chazal didn't see Kriyas Yam Suf being a vehicle by which Klal Yisrael were saved from the Egyptians that were chasing after them. Because if the whole point was that Klal Yisrael should be saved from the Egyptians, then Harav Drochim Lamakam, the Rebbe Shalom has many ways of being able to save Klal Yisrael, and he didn't have to dafka split the sea. He could, for example, have said to Klal Yisrael, go out and fight the Egyptians and I will help you in the war against the Egyptians, that you'll win the war. In the same way as happened at a later point in time in the Milchoma with Amalek. In other words, the Rebbeinu Shlom didn't have to tell them, go into the sea and I'll split the sea. The Rebbeinu Shlom could have said to them, stay on the shore, wait for the Egyptians to come, fight them, and I'll make sure that you win the war in the same way as you won the war in the fight against Amalek. Therefore, by virtue of the fact that the Rebbeinu Shlom didn't do it that way, and by virtue of the fact that the Rebbeinu Shlom, the Chochmosai, decided that the way in which Klal Yisrael are going to be saved from the Egyptians is by the sea splitting and by Klal Yisrael passing through the dry water. Contradiction in terms, no? Only dry water, dry land. And the Egyptians then attempting the same kunz and drowning, by the fact that it had to happen in that way, according to Chazal, that indicates that the actual splitting of the sea and the whole story of the sea splitting had a different function and a different purpose all together. And Chazal come along and Chazal tell us that the purpose of Kriyas Yam Suf was in order to instill within Klal Yisrael the concept of Mesiras Nefesh. That was the point of Kriyas Yam Suf. The Medrash says that Rabbi Abua said, Afal pi shenema kvar sheheminu b'mitzrayim, although we find that Klal Yisrael were ma'aminim in Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says, v'yem an'am, that the people believed, chazru v'leyaminu, they lost their emuna. Shenema avaviseinu b'mitzrayim lehiskilu nifleisecho. However, kiven sheba'u alayam, when they came to the sea, v'ra'u gvurasi shel Kodesh Baruch Hu, and they saw what Kodesh Baruch Hu is doing, hayeichu oisem mishpot b'rishoyim, how he's punishing the Egyptians, miyad v'ya'aminu. They really, once again, returned to their emuna in the Rebbeinu Shalom. So their point of Kriyas Yam Suf was to strengthen the emuna of Klal Yisrael and to instill within them the what is the direct result of emuna, namely Mesiras Nefesh, to go to the bitter end in your belief in the Rebbeinu Shalom, even to the degree where it's going to constitute even loss of life. And lichura, this is the reason why the Rebbeinu Shlom said to Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Parai that they're only leaving Mitzrayim for 3 days, in order that Paroi should think that Klal Yisrael are not leaving or running away from Mitzrayim because God commanded them, but because they want, right, to go away. And therefore, that's why he was willing to chase after them, which is what the pasuk says. Vayagid leparo, Paro was told ki baruch ham that they had escaped, meaning that they had left on their own accord and not because they had been commanded by God, and that resulted in him chasing after them, and that resulted in the Rabban Shalom doing the ness of Kriyas Yamsuf. But had Moshe Rabbeinu initially come to Paro and said to Paro that it's God who wants us to go, then Paro, who had received all these makas, including makas b'cheres, would have realized that you don't start up with God, and therefore would never have gone chasing after them to get them back to come to Mitzrayim, and therefore Kriyas Yamsuf would never have happened. So, therefore, Kriyas Yamsuf wasn't a vehicle in order to save Klal Yisrael from the Egyptians that were running after them, but the other way around. The only reason why the Egyptians ran after and chased after Klal Yisrael was in order that we should get to a situation where the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to split the sea, because the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to split the sea to be mashrish in Klal Yisrael, the Indian of Emunah, and the Indian of Mesiris Nefesh. Chazal tell us, it's a medrash in this week's parasha, that when you read Kriya Shema, you have to mention a number of things. You have to mention Kriyas Yamsuf, you have to mention Makas Bechiris, and that's what we do. In Emes V'Yatziv, which we say after Kriya Shema, or adjoining Kriya Shema, we mention the Inyan of Kriyas Yamsuf, and we mention the Inyan of Makas Bechiris. Why is it that there is a halacha that we should mention Kriyas Yamsuf in Emes V'Yatziv, which we say immediately after Kriya Shema? So the Medrash says, V'lo matzorich lahazkir Kriyas Yamsuf be'Emes V'Yatziv. The answer is, l'fi shekiven shekora lohem es hayam, because the Ribbono Shel Olam split the sea, haminu b'Hashem, they believed in God. In other words, because the whole inyan of Kriyas Yamsuf was to create a situation where Klal Yisrael will be ma'aminim, therefore, Kriyas Shema, which is an expression of Emunah, how does Kriyas Shema start? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, right? The declaration of Emunah b'Hashem has to be intertwined, or has to be interbound with the inyan of Kriyas Yamsuf, and that's why immediately after Kriyas Shema in Emes V'Yatziv, we say over the story of Kriyas Yamsuf. However, if you think about this Medrash, there's something very strange in the Medrash. The Medrash starts off and asks a question. What's the question the Medrash starts off by asking? Why is it that immediately after Kriyas Shema in Emes V'Yatziv, you say two things? What are the two things? Kriyas Yamsuf and Makas Bechiris. Answers the Medrash. Why do you have to say Kriyas Yamsuf and Emes V'Yatziv? Because Kriyas Yamsuf is Emunah and Kriyas Shema is Emunah, and therefore that's the connection between saying Kriyas Yamsuf and Kriyas Shema together. And the Medrash conveniently forgot about Makas Bechiris, right? You simply ignore that. Why didn't the Medrash say a pashta reason why you have to say Kriyas Yamsuf after Kriyas Shema? And Medrash has said that the reason why you have to say Kriyas Yamsuf is because the Ribbono Shel Olam saved Klal Yisrael through Kriyas Yamsuf, right? So there's one of the actions of the Ribbono Shel Olam on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and therefore it makes sense that v'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha, because he saved us. The answer is that whenever we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, any mention of Yetzias Mitzrayim includes the fact that the whole of Yetzias Mitzrayim was from beginning to end one big miracle. And in reality, if there is a mitzvah of Schiris Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is mentioned in Kriya Shema, then that general Schira of Yetzias Mitzrayim really includes all the individual nisim that took place at the time when we left Egypt. So that Schiris Yetzias Mitzrayim includes already the Ness of Kriyas Yamsuf, because the Ness of Kriyas Yamsuf was simply Lichura, just one of the many Nisim which took place at the time that they left Egypt. In which case the question arises, why do we mention Kriyas Yamsuf again? Specifically, after we finished Kriyashma in Emes V'yatsiv. Now, if you're going to ask me why we mention Makas Bechairis in Emes V'yatsiv, I could give you a theoretical answer on that. Because amongst all the Nisim which were done, Makas Bechairis, even amongst the Makas, all of which were Nisim, happens to have been unique. Why was Makas Bechairis unique? Because Makas Bechairis was the only Makkah that was done by the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and it wasn't done through a Malach, and it wasn't done through a Shliach, it wasn't done through a Sorof. Right? And Makas Bechairis was the final Makkah, the Makkah of a Patish, as it were, which allowed Klal Yisrael to leave Mitzrayim. So therefore I can come up with a theory, I can come up with a logic as to why we should specifically mention... Sorry?
Why did we mention
it? I could say because it's unique amongst all the Makkahs, that it was done specifically by the Ribbono Shel Olam himself and not done through a Shliach, as opposed to the other Makkahs, or alternatively because it was the final Makkah, which actually was the catalyst which created the situation that Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim. But all the other details of Yetzias Mitzrayim, right, are lichura included in the general mitzvah of Schiris Yetzias Mitzrayim. And therefore, why was Kriyas Yamsuf, which seems to be nothing more than a prat, one detail in the series of Nisim, why is this mentioned separately? The answer is that Kriyas Yamsuf isn't part of the Nisim that happened in order to save Klal Yisrael from the Egyptians, because that wasn't necessary, that Ness. The Ribbono Shel Olam could have saved them from the Egyptians chasing after them through some other method, as we said before. The reason why we mention Kriyas Yamsuf separately is because Kriyas Yamsuf was unique, but it had a unique purpose, and the purpose was to be mashrish in Klal Yisrael this inyan of emuna and this inyan of Mesiras Nefesh. The pasuk says, in the Shira in connection with Kriyas Yamsuf, the Hamayim Lohem Chaimo, that the water was like a wall, right, on each side of them. The Yalkut on that pasuk says the following: B'shah sheyodu Yisrael yom, when Klal Yisrael went into the sea, Yorad Gavriel, the Malach Gavriel, also went down with them, the Hekifom, and the water surrounded them, Umeshamram Kachema. And the water acted as a chayva. The Hayamachris, and the Malach Gavriel announced, Hizaru be Yisrael, be careful of Klal Yisrael, she'asidim lekabel ha-teira, because they are going to receive teira miyaminoi shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the right hand Kav Yachal of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then he moves over to the left side of Klal Yisrael, Umismoilam Hayoimer, and there he announced, Hizharu Ba'elu, be careful from Klal Yisrael, Shehasidin Lehoniach Tfilin Bismoil, because they are going to wear Tfilin on their left hands. And then he moved over the Mayim Shalifnehem to the water which was in front of them, and he said, Hizaru Ba'elu, be careful of Am Yisrael, She'asidin She'yiyu Chaismin Lifnehem Bibris, because they are going to have the Chaism of a Bris, of Bris Mila, which is going to be Mekuyim by Klal Yisrael. And then he moved behind them, and he said, be careful of Klal Yisrael. Why? Because Asidin Laharis Kesher Shel Tfilin V'Konof Tzitzayeh Mechareyem, because they're going to have the Kesher of Tfilin behind them, and they're going to have tzitzis behind them. Very strange Yalkut. Why, at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, is the Malach announcing the mitzvah of Mila, the mitzvah of Tfilin, and the mitzvah of Tzitzis? Okay, I can understand that he's talking about, be careful of Klal Yisrael, they're going to be Mekabel Torah, because the pasuk says Mefurish, that the whole purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to be Mekabel Torah. But why does the Medrash, after it talks about Kabbalah Sotela in general, single out three mitzvahs: the mitzvah of Mila, the mitzvah of Tfilin, and the mitzvah of Tzitzis? That's question number one. Question number two is that there is another Medrash The Medrash says, we all know that the first person to jump into the sea was who? Nachshon ben Aminadov. The Medrash says in Parshas Nosoi, which is talking about the different Nasiim, and the pasuk which mentions the Nasi Nachshon ben Aminadov, who was the Nasi, the base, the Shevet Yehuda, Lomo Shmoi Nachshon. Why is he called Nachshon? Because he was the first person to jump into the sea. Mi shekidesh shmoy al yom tchilo, the person who jumped into the sea first, hu shekarev tchilo, he's going to bring the first korban amongst the Nasiim, and all the Nasiim had to bring korbanos, and the first person to bring the korban was Nachshon ben Aminadov. To which the Mefoshim and the Medrash ask, What on earth is the connection between Kriyas Yamsuf and Korbanos? And the question becomes more acute because I don't want to sit here all night, but there are numerous midrashim on the topic of Kriyas Yamsuf which interconnect the concept of Kriyas Yamsuf with the concept of Korbanos. So now we have a very strange situation. We have a story told to us in the Torah of Kriyas Yamsuf. And we then have Chazal who come along and say that there is some connection between the mitzvah of Milah, the mitzvah of Tfilin, the mitzvah of Tzitzis, the inyan of Korbanos, and Kriyas Yamsuf. What is the connection? I just want to mention one more interesting point. The Gemara says in the Dorim, G'dela Mila. Mila is a very great mitzvah. Shehi shkula keneged kol ha-mitzvah shebe-Torah. It's the equivalent of all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. It weighs up against all the other mitzvahs of the Torah. And the Gemara brings a pasuk to prove this. What does the Gemara mean when the Gemara says that mitzvahs mila is shakal keneged all the mitzvahs? Is it possible to say that being mekayim one mitzvah can be the same as being mekayim all the mitzvahs in the Torah? In other words, a guy who was mekayim all the mitzvahs in the Torah, but he wasn't mekayim the mitzvah of mila because he didn't have a son to mal, right? He only had daughters. Right? And there was another guy who was Mekayim the mitzvah of Mila, but he was not Mekayim any other mitzvah at all in the Torah. He was Mechal Shabbos, and he had Nevedis and Trefes, and he never in his life wore a pair of tefillin, and he never in his life wore a pair of tzitzis, he never did anything at all. But he did have a son, and he was Mekayim the mitzvah of Mila by circumcising his son. Are you going to say that these two guys are equal? Doesn't seem to make sense at all. Now, how does the Gemara know that Mila is shakul keneged kol ha-mitzvahs kulam? The Gemara learns it out from a pasuk. What's the pasuk the Gemara learns it out from? Hine dam habris ha-shekoros Hashem imochem ha-kol ha-dvarim ha-elu. It just so happens that pasuk of Hine Dam Habris isn't referring to Mila at all. That pasuk is not talking about Mila at all. That pasuk is a pasuk in the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and it's talking about Korbanos. It's not talking about Mila. So what's... why are we bringing a raya from a pasuk legavei korbanos that mila is shakul keneged kol hakatayra kula? Now the Ran on the Dorim, just as a matter of interest, had this problem, and therefore the Ran on the Dorim changes the pasuk, the gear set in the pasuk, and quotes a pasuk in Parashat Kisisa where the pasuk has more connection maybe with Mila. But what's even more strange is that we find another Mayim Chazal which tells us about another mitzvah, that it's shkula keneged kol ha-mitzvahs. It's a Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara learns out from the pasuk of Uri Yisim Ha-Yisai Uvzadachatim Etz Kol Mitzvahs Hashem, says the Gemara that tzitzis is shkula keneged kol ha-mitzvahs. So are you going to tell me that if a guy is Mekayim the mitzvah of tzitzis, and he's not Mekayim any other mitzvah at all in the whole Torah, that it's as if he was Mekayim kol ha-Torah kula? It also doesn't make sense. Now, however you're going to learn pshat and what this means, one thing is very clear. The Gemara is drawing some sort of tzad hashova, some sort of common factor between Mila and Sitzis, that both of them are mitzvahs which are shakul like all the other mitzvahs in the Torah. So obviously there must be some very inherent connection between the mitzvah of Sitzis and the mitzvah of Mila. Let's add on one more. I just want to add on one more little factor. Rashi, at the end of Parshas Shlach, brings B'shem Reb Moshe HaDarshan a remez that how many strings of tzitzis are there? On each one, what do you end up with? 16. You count them. Yeah? I think you better check your sitters.
No, because it's the same one.
Four strings
doubled over. It's four strings doubled over. So how many is four doubled?
Eight.
Says Rav Moshe HaDarshan that Shmeinas HaChutin Shevetzitzis, the eight Chutin of the Tzitzis, Keneged Shmeinas HaYomim, are Keneged the 8 days. Shesharo Yisrael, that it took Klal Yisrael, Mishayotzu Mimitzrayim, from the time that they came out of Egypt, Ad She'omru Shira Al Hayom, until they said the Shira at Kriyas Yamsuf. Actually, incorrect. Why? The Mephoshim say it's not true. It was actually only 7 days from Yitzias Mitzrayim until Kriyas Yamsuf. Kriyas Yamsuf was on the last day of Pesach, and they went out of Egypt on the first day of Pesach. How many days of Pesach are there?
Seven.
So it's only 7 days, not 8 days. So what is the Medrash, what is Rav Moshe HaDarshan talking about? Now, in connection with Mila, there's a huge debate amongst the Rishonim and the Mefarshim as to the concept of Mila. But one thing is very clear. In a society where anti-Semitism is rampant, and in a society where for hundreds, if not over 1,000 years, being identified as a Jew constitutes a threat, then the ultimate identification of being Jewish, namely Mila, constitutes an act of Mesiras Nefesh on the part of the person who does it. Therefore there are those who maintain that the whole concept of Mila is a symbolic act which is identifying the Jew as being an Ish Mesiras Nefesh, a person of Mesiras Nefesh. It's an act of Mesiras Nefesh on the part of a father to circumcise his son, knowing that by doing that he's putting him in a situation whereby he's permanently going to be, in the simplest way possible, identified as a Jew. Tzitzis constitutes a interesting halacha. The halacha of tzitzis is that tzitzis should be worn in such a way that they can be seen. There is machlekas as to whether only the tzitzis have to be seen, or whether the actual beged has to be seen as well. There is a shitta of the Arizal, where the Arizal says that the tzitzis shouldn't be seen, but Rechura, the Arizal is talking only about, according to most of the Paiskim, the Arizal is talking about the beged, he's not talking about the tzitzis. Mishnah Berurah writes that anyone who doesn't wear their tzitzis in such a way that people can see them is basically saying, I'm embarrassed that I'm a Jew. In other words, the concept of tzitzis is the concept of the declaration that I am a Jew. Again, in a society where being identified as a Jew constitutes a problem, and in many occasions a problem of life or death, the act of wearing tzitzis in the way in which the halacha prescribes basically is an act which is expressing the concept of mesiras nefesh. The Ramban says, what is the idea that lies behind the concept of korbanos? Why is it that the Torah was machayev korbanos? Says the Ramban that the concept of korbanos is a symbolic act of mesiras nefesh. When a person sees the korban being consumed within the flames of the mizbeach, he says to himself, this really should be happening to me, and it's a kapara for me that it's not happening to me, but it's happening to the animal. So again, the concept of korbanos is the concept of mesiras nefesh. About tefillin, what does the pasuk say in connection with tefillin? The pasuk says in connection with tefillin that tefillin is something that the goyim see it, right, and understand it's a declaration on the part of the person, Kishem Hashem Nikra Olecha, that you are expressing your identification with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Again, tefillin is a concept of mesiras nefesh. The Chazal tell us in a number of places, in different languages, the idea that on the pasuk which says Hayom Ra'o Vayonis, that the sea by Kriyas Yamsuf saw something and it fled, it ran away from it. Ask Chazal Ma Ra'o, what did the sea observe that it all of a sudden fled, as it were, and in two directions, and thereby split? Ra, it saw Aroine Shel Yosef Yerid Liyam, it saw the coffin of Yosef going into the sea. And that's what caused the sea to split. What is the connection between the splitting of the sea and the Aron of Yosef? One of the most difficult acts of mesiras nefesh that exists for a Jew is the ability to exist within a non-Jewish society and remain truthful and faithful to his Yiddishkeit without getting influence from the society that surrounds him, because it's a law of nature that the psychology of a person is such that he wants to blend in with his surroundings. He wants to live as a member of society that surrounds him, and there is nothing more difficult for a person than bedidus, than being alone. Human beings by nature are social beings. They don't like being on their own. Therefore, the Jew who's living in a non-Jewish society and has to live alone because of the chiyuv of shmiras Torah and mitzvahs and the zeiros he has to have to a lot of things which are totally accepted in a non-Jewish society, is basically acting with mesiras nefesh. The ultimate example of the individual who acted with mesiras nefesh is Yosef HaTzadik, right, who was taken away from his family, Misgalgal to Mitzrayim, to an environment and to a society which was the antithesis of the family and the society and the environment that he grew up in, was considered by the Egyptians to be a low-class individual. Rashi says, Parshas Miketz, that it was considered to be a te'eva for the Mitzrayim even to eat with the Jew. And within this environment and within this society where he's alone for more than 10 years and goes through all sorts of trials and all sorts of tribulations, he remains the whole time the Na'ar Ivri, right? Hu Yosef HaMechov, Hu Yosef HaMitzrayim, absolutely no change. The same Yosef HaTzadik. And when Ashes Potipharah tries to seduce him and tries to create a situation where he should become Kechol HaGoyim like any other non-Jew in that environment, right? In that Nisoyan, Lo Shoma Eileho, he doesn't listen to her, and he says he can't do it because the Torah doesn't allow him to do this. Therefore, if there is anybody who is an ultimate example of Mesiras Nefesh, it's Yosef. So if the whole function and the whole purpose of Kriyas Yamsuf is as a symbol of Mesiras Nefesh, that the entire Klal Yisrael were willing to go into the Yam and jump into the Yam after Nachshon Ben Aminadab, even though they didn't know that the Yam was going to split, right? And that was the whole point of Kriyas Yamsa. The whole point of Kriyas Yamsa was to emphasize Mesiras Nefesh Legabe, the Jew. Then we can understand why Chazal interconnect the concept of Kriyas Yamsa with the concept of Mila and the concept of Tzitzis and the concept of Tfilin and the concept of Karbonis and the concept of Yosef, because they all revolve around one and the same theme. And the one and the same theme is Mesiras Nefesh. Lemaisa. What's the limit of Lemaisa? We have a very warped understanding of what Mesiras Nefesh is all about. We understand that the guy who's told convert or we'll kill you and gets burnt at the stake, right, and all of us turn around and say, ooh, he was Mesiras Nefesh, right? The Alter and the Vardok says a very interesting point. He says, you know, we use the word Mesiras Nefesh a lot, but most of the situations when we use the word Mesiras Nefesh, we're talking about Mesiras HaGuf, not Mesiras Nefesh. Most of the time we're talking about physical uncomfortability. Giving up one's life, right? That's physical. Right? We believe the life carries on even after you're dead. But our understanding of Mesiras Nefesh is the great leap, the tremendous act, right? The guy who gave up his life and jumped in a fire, right? The Daniels of the world, the Hanania Mishael, the Azarias of the world, the Avraham Avinus of the world. But the emphasis is that's not Mesiras Nefesh. You know, it is, obviously it is Mesiras Nefesh. But that's not the Mesiras Nefesh that we're talking about here. Because Mesiras Nefesh is also on little things. Yeah, the Mesiras Nefesh of tzitzis is not a big deal. It's the ability to be able to say, I am a Jew, and I'm proud of being a Jew. And I have no hang-ups about being a Jew. It's the ability to be within a non-Jewish society and to be able to say, I'm not embarrassed about the fact that I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm not embarrassed about the fact that I'm an observant Jew. On the contrary, I'm actually quite proud about it. And Moshe Reichman used to say over the always the story of how he closed his first big real estate deal, which turned him from a successful real estate dealer to a multi-millionaire. He said that he was negotiating for months and months and months with a very large company, which is represented by a team of lawyers, right, on a specific real estate deal. And if he managed to get this deal, he knew that he was going to become, but there chateva, unless something went very badly, rather multi-millionaire out of it. But it was a very difficult deal, and he wasn't getting anywhere. And he finally managed to break through. He finally got to a point where he managed to come up with a combination where the lawyers on the other side started to come towards him, and he could see that the deal was beginning to close. And he was sitting in an office in Manhattan with his team of lawyers and the other team of lawyers, and they were arguing like crazy. And his lawyers turned around to him, and his lawyers said to him, another 25 minutes, 30 minutes, if we keep going like this and we keep hammering them and we keep the pressure up, we'll be able to close the deal, but we've got to keep the pressure up. And he looked at his watch and he stood up and he said, gentlemen, you have to excuse me, but I need a 20-minute break. And his lawyers nearly died. Because the whole point was to keep the pressure up, then they're going to close the deal. If you stop and you make a 20-minute break, then it loses the whole momentum, nothing's going to happen. So his non-Jewish lawyers said to him, why are you leaving? And the other side as well said to him, why? So he said, because I'm an Orthodox Jew have to daven mincha before sunset. It is now 8 minutes before sunset, I've got to go and find myself a minyan for mincha. And he left. He came back 25 minutes later, he said, on the assumption that it was all over and it was all finished, and he just came back to pick up his stuff that he left there. And he walked in the room and everybody was sitting there, and the lawyers on the other side gave him over a contract and said, sign. So he signed the contract, and then he turned around to this team of lawyers and he said, I don't understand. He said, we've been arguing for months and months and months, and you guys didn't want to budge, right? He says, I thought I was on the verge of getting you to budge, but it's going to take me another half an hour to do it. And then I walk out the room and I come back and you signed the contract already. What happened? He said, and one of the lawyers on the other side got up and said, the guy who's willing to lose a multi-million dollar deal in order to go and pray, that's the guy we want to do business with. You never, as a Jew, lost out by being in the environment of non-Jews and saying that I am a Jew. But it's a Mesiras Nefesh, because it's not easy. It goes against the character of all of us and the personality of all of us, that we don't like being oddballs, we don't like being different. The fact is that I have a acquaintance who lives in Borough Park. He's a vision Sahasid. He's in a very Jewish line of business. He's a diamond dealer. But he told me that he's never ever in his life done a deal with a Jew. Never ever. He said his entire business is in hick places in America. He says, but they don't even know what a Jew looks like. He says, they have no idea. In other words, they know there's such a thing as Jews, he says, But his line of diamonds that he deals in is the sort of stuff that is in demand in certain. This is basically where I'm based down south. And he's very, very out in the sticks. He spends the whole week traveling. He comes back for Shabbos. Right? He's a vision of Fasid. He goes with his hosen and zot. Right? He wears his trousers tucked into his black socks. He wears a sub and a kapalush. Right? He's got on curled, beautifully curled pairs that come down to here. And this is how he does business. There's no problem. Absolutely no problem whatsoever. Why is he successful? Because he's Moser Nefesh. Because you've got Moser Nefesh there. But if you walk around looking like a goy, right? Or let's say take it a stage further, you walk around looking like a gay goy, right? Then there's absolutely no reason why anybody should respect you at all. Because you actually are a very second rate gay goy, right?
Thank you.
You don't look like the way a gay guy should look. You're a short, fat, tubby, little Jew with a very Jewish face wearing a pink shirt. The Mesiras Nefesh is in the little things. Mesiras Nefesh is in the big things. Mesiras Nefesh is in the situation where a person finds himself within an environment and it's embarrassing to be in that environment. But because I'm a Jew, I have no brera. I have to act and do things which will maybe cause embarrassment to me. So what? That's Mesiras Nefesh. But Mesiras Nefesh can also be in a Jewish environment, right? Totally. You want to do something, right? It's embarrassing to tell someone what you want to do. It's an embarrassment for you to tell somebody what to do, what you want to do. Right? All of us. There's not one guy sitting in this room who hasn't got certain things that he wants to do and that he does that he's not embarrassed about, because in the way in which the public views him, it's beneath his dignity to be doing that. All of us, every single one of us here, would like to do certain things, but there's a certain red line. And the reason why we don't do it is because, not because we don't want to do it, we want to do it, we really want to do it, but the reason, right, that we don't do it is because we know that we have a certain standing in the eyes of other people, and they would look at us differently if they knew that this is what we're doing, so that stops us from doing it. That's basic human psychology. That's the first thing you learn. Psychology 101. What's one of the first things you learn? Right? That the way in which people act is based very much on what their image of themselves is in the public eye. And according to that, they will act in order that they shouldn't disturb their image in the public eye. If the guy has built himself an image within the society that he's in, that he's the clown, then he will always act as the clown, because that's what gives him his stature and his standing in society. And therefore, if it comes to a situation where he has to do something and what he's doing contradicts his public image of being a clown, he has great difficulty in doing it because he doesn't want to ruin his public image. Or if a person has a public image as being the type of guy who doesn't do anything without really thinking it through first, and really, you know, he's one of these analytical people that can't blow his nose without a 15-sided hakira as to whether he should blow his nose now or he shouldn't blow his nose now, then he's not going to do things instinctively, because it ruins, it kills his public image. That's not the public image that he wants, right? And all of us are like that. We all do things. Rabbi Lapkin says very terrifying quotes are very.
What he is, what he wants to do. Someone makes himself an image of what he wants to do.
No, everybody makes themselves an image in more than what they are, because everybody knows what they should be, so they're always a little bit higher than what they are, and they're always preventing themselves from doing things in order to disturb their image. That's the Matthias. That's the way the human personality works. But the very Lopian says that it brings a chazal, a medrash, that what is Gehinnom? Gehinnom is that they roll a film of your entire life, including everything you thought about and everything you did when you get up there. From the day you were born until the day you died. The audience are the people who in this world respected you. That's Gehenna. Because that's the way that we live. So when a guy gets into a Makom Nisayon, right, he wants to do something. And that which he wants to do contradicts what the image that he's trying to project is. Right? Then what's the Eitzah? That's where Mesiras Nefesh comes into play. It's Mesiras Nefesh to be open about it, not to lie about it, to do it, to not to do it. Right? All these things are Mesiras Nefesh. Little things. Meaningless. But it's Mesiras Nefesh for a person when he's in a Nisayon of wanting to do something and having to do something, and it's going to destroy the image that he is. It's Mesiras Nefesh for him to be open about it. That's Mesiras Nefesh. It's not easy. Mesiras Nefesh is self-sacrifice, right? So, yes, because that's what the Torah demands of a person. The Torah demands of a person to do the right thing. So, the first thing you've got to do is you've got to find out if it's the right thing. So the first thing you've got to do is to go and find out whether this is the right thing. So ask somebody who's an expert in the area, is this the right thing to do or is it not the right thing to do? But we won't do that. Why won't we do that? Because the Etzem Shaila already creates a dent in the image that we're trying to present. So we won't do that. So instead we'll do 50,000 things all around, backwards and forwards, and we'll end up, right, being over all sorts of Yisurim. Why? Because we haven't got the Mesiras Nefesh, and that's Mesiras Nefesh. To destroy one's own image that one's created, right, is basically to kill yourself to a certain degree. That's considered to be Mesiras Nefesh. If a person wants to do something at a particular point in time, right, and he overcomes the desire to do it, right, and it takes something away from him, which it does, it always does, right, for all of us, right? If I don't want to get up for davening in the morning, right, and I have a legitimate reason why I don't want to get up, right, for me personally, right, the most difficult thing is to get up for davening on Friday morning. It is the most difficult thing. I never, for years, have managed to sleep on a Thursday night more than an hour, maximum, if I get to bed at all. If I don't get to bed at all, I have no problem. I can make it here for Shabbos. Right? I may not daven with the right kavanah. Right? I may not be focused the way I should be focused, but I have no problem. If I'm up anyway, I'm over. My biggest problem is that I usually go to bed on a Thursday night somewhere in the region of 5:30 in the morning. Right? To get up at 7, right, is for me, personally, one of the most difficult things in the world. Right? Because if you get up at 5:30, your peak of when your deepest part when you're asleep is 7 o'clock. So to get up at 7 o'clock after sleeping an hour and a half and after you're zonked out from a whole week, right, takes something away from a person. It takes away from his comfort. It takes away from his feeling of geschmackheit. Right? It's not something I want to do. And to do it constitutes an act of a serious nefesh. Right? I'm being meiser my being to the very, I'm saying, because there's a stuff of mine kriyishma there. Right, so I have no choice. So true, I could get up, right, say Kriya Shema, and go back to bed, right? But you can do that at your age, you can't do that at my age. Right? It just doesn't work. And if you're up already, you know, I'm going to go back to bed again. I'm sugar in a minute, right? I may be lazy, but I'm not crazy. But that's an act of serious nefesh, right? If you're starving hungry, right? You know how many times this happened to Rabbi Lopin and myself? You're in the middle of nowhere, you're driving in the middle of the night, in the middle of nowhere. Right? You haven't eaten for about 28 hours. You're starved out of your mind. Right? So you stop somewhere, and you walk into a service station on a highway, and you're dying, you must eat something. There's something there. Right? There is, it says in it kosher, right? Unidentified symbol. I mean, you know, what can really
what can there already be in it? Right? It does have a hechsher. I mean, it does say kosher on it. Now, there is a New York State law about writing kosher on something which is not kosher. I mean, I can get the whole mahalo for you. It'll take me 25 minutes, I can be matir, right? A ham sandwich. Right? At 4 in the morning after you haven't eaten for 26 hours, right? That's an act of a serious nefesh to be able to say no. I have my principles about which hechsher I do rely on and which hechsher I don't rely on. I'm not going into now what you know what the choices you make of the sharing, but you have a principle, right? I'll tell you what happens to me the whole time. OUD, right? You know how many times I just stand there looking at this thing and we say to ourselves OUD. All right, Rav Hirsch Pesach Frank has a tshuva. There is milk powder in this not milk. Then you say, the heck with it. Leave it. Let's go. Take a Coke and Weizigegangen. And eventually we'll find a place. There still is a place somewhere on the way to Chicago that can't work out why two guys walked in at 4 o'clock in the morning and bought 3 boxes of matzahs and 4 jars of schmaltz herring. They can't work it out. You know, had they known that we hadn't eaten for 2 days and we were completely starved out of our minds, we would have eaten dog food if it had a hash on it. Believe me, if it would have had a hash on it, we would have bought it and we would have eaten it. They would understand why they managed to sell these 3 packets of matzahs and the 4 jars of schmaltz herring they'd have probably had there from the Civil War, because no Jew had ever gone in there before. Fine. That constitutes an act of mysterious nefesh. It's not the jumping in the fire always. It's the small things. Yes, yeah. Listen, there's no. You're all big talkers, but at the end of the day, there doesn't exist a guy in this yeshiva who's a heavier smoker or has been smoking longer, right, than I have. Not that I'm proud of it. Right? I kill myself from it. But the matthias is, right. There is nobody around here who's been smoking 45 years. Right, there isn't. Right. So don't tell me that it's impossible to go through a Shabbos without smoking 10 minutes after Shkia, right? Don't tell me it's Narishkeit. Right? If I'm a guy who's been smoking 45 years on and off, right? I'm not saying that straight through. There were a couple of years when I stopped in the middle, but basically, right? Smoking 45, and I can stop smoking on Erev Pesach and start again on Yisrochag. So nobody can tell me that they're going to have this last cigarette 5 minutes before. Right? Well, it's Narishkeit. Right? It's absolutely something Narishkeit. The question is, how much do you want to give away of your own self, of your own desires, right? Because of what? Because of what?
Why wouldn't you smoke on Pesach?
Because I don't smoke on Yom Tov. I don't see what the heter is. No, I don't see what the heter is. The
what?
Yeah, what's that? The
Eser also service?
What?
What's the Eser of Chalamot?
What's the heter?
Is it Chametz?
Oh, we'll talk about it some other time, but what's the heter? I don't see what the heter is. Do you know the Chalamoy is Yom Tov? Did you ever think about that?
No.
Oh, so then you better start learning how to Chalamoy. I suggest you sit down with other cats and you tell him, seeing that I am totally ignorant about the topic of Chalamoy, I suggest we learn Hilchos Chalamoy. But don't do it during morning. So they'll find some other time in the day to learn it with him. And then you'll find out the Chalamoy is Yom Tov. He said that it's Yom Tov which has certain heterim. I'll call upon him. That's Mesiras Nefesh. All these things, Mesiras Nefesh doesn't mean the big things. Mesiras Nefesh means the little things.